Joining me now is the presenter of the outstanding Bristol Politics show. He visits this programme contractually once a month. I know he's on holiday at the moment, so it's a great pleasure to welcome back to the show the one and only Tony Gosling. Tony, welcome back. How are you?
Well, as you know, Richie, on my programme, we always say, don't believe a word we say. that's how good our show is. I mean, I think the thing is that, I mean, for me, the whole point is you've got to treat your listeners, your consumers of your junk news, whatever it is, with some respect. And we're getting none at all nowadays. This is the Orwellian world where stuff is not supposed to make sense. You're not supposed to think about it. And you're supposed to either spend your life like trying to figure stuff out that's complete rubbish and it cannot ever be figured out, or switch off. And they'd much rather people just switch off, right? Let's just get on with our lives, because the people who are running things just don't make any sense. And every time you try and engage with it, it just makes you feel desperately worried. And so it's a way of just avoiding the fear, I suppose, that we're being run by tyrants.
I have to start off the programme by saying, I've been listening to the biography of David Letterman, which is fantastic, and listening to how Letterman would he would set up a joke by letting everybody know a joke was coming. So I'm going to say I'm profoundly disappointed in you, Tony Gosling, after all the years we've known each other. I sat down over the weekend to watch an outstanding docudrama on Sky called The Salisbury Poisonings, a brilliant bit of filmmaking, and I came away convinced that the Russians sent some agents into Salisbury with some Novichok, and that all of that bollocks you told me over the years about it being a conspiracy was all wrong. It's a terrible joke, hence I mentioned David Letterman. I never laughed as much in all my life, Tony. I don't know if you've seen this on Sky.
I haven't. And to be quite honest with you, I wouldn't even bother to look. Listen, as a former BBC reporter in Salisbury, working to the local radio station there, and back in the days when journalism was serious and people actually did a job of informing the public rather than bamboozling and diverting the public, which is what journalism is today. Mostly. I mean, I do know quite a lot of mainstream staff journalists, etc., in the profession. And they've either given up. They've sort of, well, look, it's just a job. And, you know, it's 9 to 5. And as long as you forget about it at the end of the day, it pays the mortgage. And there are also quite a lot who are very conscientious, but they're also aware that as soon as they start to ask too many questions, just like maybe intelligence officers, who are recruited into the intelligence services, you start to ask too many questions or the wrong questions, you start to have an inquiring mind, and they're going to find they put you in a box marked trouble. This is what bullying is all about. They put you in a box marked trouble, and you're going to find that some other problem is found. Oh, it's that you keep parking in the wrong parking space in the car park, and you're going to be put on some sort of disciplinary. And you're going to be, your work is going to be unpleasant. Your career is going to be over. So, I mean, there are a lot of, I think, actually brave, very brave journalists in staff jobs today who carry on doing the rubbish, knowing that at least it means that they can do the occasional decent story.
Trying to do a little bit, yeah. Do as much as they can. Tony, we're going to talk about something you found really interesting. There's an Irish writer called Aisling Loughlin, who used to work for, she worked for national and commercial media in Ireland. We'll come to that in a moment. But listeners have asked me to ask you specifically, and we've got plenty of time. We've got as much time as you want between now and 7. But they've asked me to ask you specifically about how the media has just gone very quiet about the murder of Anne Widdecombe. Why is that? Could there be an innocent explanation that the media believes that the man in custody is the guy who did it, that it's open and shut? Or do you think our listeners are right to be concerned about the lack of coverage or even radio silence on the death of Anne Widdecombe? What do you think?
Well, it should be obvious to anyone that knows their media law that they can't really talk about it.
No. Now.
They can talk about some circumstances, but the national press cannot speculate about this guy because he's been charged. And, I mean, I don't honestly think it's quite possible he didn't do it. I've no idea whether he did or not. And I wouldn't be silly enough to really, to try and influence a potential jury on the matter. But it's the whole thing. I think, I mean, it could easily be a patsy. You know, someone else may have done this, and he may, or else it could be that he's some kind of Manchurian candidate who's had his little buttons pressed and told that you can, you know, we'll look after you if you go and do this dirty deed. And it also could be that he's part of this Order of Nine Angles, which is a rather sinister organization, which guarantees that it will look after people that do assassinations for it. It's basically satanic. It's an organization. It's generally right wing, but it also includes scoop, you know, sort of run by the right wing, the far right, but it also includes left wing people. It's a very interesting group that never gets talked about in the mainstream press. Yvette Cooper, when she was in opposition as Home Secretary, demanded of the current, whoever was the Tory, was Home Secretary at the time, to ban the organization. But it is still out there. It's, you know, the idea is that if you go and do a killing for them, then you get promoted within the organization, and also you get looked after, whether it is you have to go to prison, you will be, you know, cared for afterwards. You'll get early release. You'll get a nice cushy prison place. You'll get the best barristers in the court. But you will progress up through the organization, and you will become more powerful if you do this. It's almost like a kind of video game style thing. And that's another thing that people always should understand when any of these violent attacks happen, is whether in whatever country it is that many of these people have been addicted to violent video games, which I mean, personally, I don't think should be, you know, there should be restrictions of some sort on them. And also they should be taken into consideration in court cases, things like violent pornography, violent video games.
But millions
these are the
of
sorts
people,
of things that
millions of people, yeah, well, play of violent people, video games and they don't have any tendency thereafter to go and shoot somebody.
True. But we need to, I think, look at people's psychological mix. And if they're a particular type of psychological type, this may just, you know, it may be their only outlet that they have. If they've got, you know, be a few friends, they've been betrayed by friends. But anyway, so the main reason it's all gone quiet is because we've now got reporting restrictions on the case, because between the point of someone being charged and when the verdict is reached, not the sentencing afterwards, but the verdict, you're not allowed to speculate on court cases, criminal court cases.
You're right.
You're just not allowed to.
You can't do that.
You know, that leave the jury to make their own decisions. Stop, because you can imagine what the Murdoch empire could do during a court case, you know, in order to try and steer a jury. And it would be rather nice to see a judge shut Murdoch down. As
wouldn't it be?
Of
this is the reason several years ago why Tommy the Muppet Robinson was sent to prison, because he was seriously coming very close to derailing a trial of a grooming gang. By the way, Tony mentioned something there. And when you've got a big old brain like Gosling, you sometimes forget that people...
A big head
and a big brain. We all sometimes forget that. We assume knowledge. Tony mentioned the Order of Nine Angles, which is a fascinating group. And I recommend that you look it up based on what Tony said. We won't get into it in great depth today, but we might do on a future programme. And he's right to mention that many years ago Yvette Cooper asked about it. So it's a kind of, it's a network of Satanists, really. And it did it begin here, and then did it end up kind of spreading out to different countries?
It looks as if it started in the UK.
Yeah.
I mean, for example, one of the really well-known, well-known amongst anyone that bothers to look these things up, unlike the London media, it was a case of a guy in an American army unit who had actually been... betraying the unit's position to ISIS.
Yes.
Right? So the idea was that ISIS could find out where this unit was and attack them in the middle of the night and destroy the unit by surprise. And he was actually part of the unit. If you can imagine how crazy that sounds. This is what these people are like. And the idea, of course, is to use a conflict like that to, you know, to fuel the hatred of ISIS, to try and make out that this is some sort of independent organization. Well, it's not. It's a British American NATO intelligence funded operation, which brings in, you know, usually young Muslims who are then convinced that they need to fight for Allah and kill, destroy Western countries.
I've got to save my reputation here, because some of my listeners will want me to be challenging you on this.
So
I can't challenge you. Listen, in June of 2020, Daniel De Simone wrote about this group for the BBC News website. I've got it here in front of me. A US soldier has been accused of plotting an attack on his own unit by sending information to the Nazi Satanist organization called the Order of Nine Angles. Now, Tony Gosling believes, and he's looked into this group far more than I have or you have, he believes that this group does have a branch of it, or it does provide assassins for governments or for other actors to go and kill people. Look it up, the Order of Nine Angles. It's absolutely fascinating. Listen, back
horrifying.
Horrifying.
It's a horrifying organisation. And
how could you be involved in it?
One of the only decent things she's ever said in her entire life was this organisation needs to be proscribed. You know, imagine you've proscribed Palestine Action, but you've not proscribed an assassination squad of Nazi Satanists. Okay, Yvette. Fine, darling. You know, get your priorities straight, huh?
Next time they're arresting people in Covent Garden for saying they stand with Palestine Action, let's me and you go down there wearing T-shirts to say that we're members of the Order of Nine Angles.
Just to make a point, Tony.
Now, back in 2017, on the 22nd of May in Manchester, at the Manchester Arena, these days the AO Arena, there was a massive explosion and 22 people were killed, more than 1,000 injured. It was a terrible thing at the Ariana Grande concert. I covered it extensively because obviously I would, and I'm up here. Tony covered it extensively on his programme. It was blamed on Salman Abedi. We found out pretty quickly, Tony and I found out around about the same time, we were the first people to talk about it, that Salman Abedi's father, and David Shaler actually put us onto it, Salman Abedi's father was Ramadan Abedi. He worked for MI6 in Libya. He was some sort of a double agent. He was blamed for it, Salman Abedi. And the amazing thing about Salman Abedi was, Caroline and myself lived just off of Wilbraham Road, and Salman Abedi lived 200 metres away from our front door, just a little bit up Wilbraham Road. So naturally, this intrepid reporter, I mean, if I didn't, Tony Gosling would never speak to me ever again. I went to the little street where he lived, and there were other Libyan people there. And they said Salman Abedi was a good lad. He was well known to be a good lad. He was a diligent worshipper. He went to the mosque. They couldn't believe he did any of it. Of course, I asked them, would they speak on the record? They said no. But they were very surprised to learn that he was involved in anything like that. Now, Tony Gosling, the man behind the ultimate Bristol politics show every Friday, 5 p.m. to 8 p.m. Terrific. Check it out, thisweek.org.uk. You have continuously looked at this and covered it, and you've become very interested in recent days because an Irish writer, broadcaster called Aisling O'Loughlin, or Aisling Loughlin, she's decided to sharpen her knives and have a go at some of the independent media who have covered this horrible thing that happened at the arena. Over to you.
Well, first of all, I'd say the mates of Abedi, when they're chatting to you, would say that, wouldn't they?
Yes.
Because they're his mates. Oh, he's a lovely guy. I'm sure he didn't do this. But the fact is, you're right about this is something called the Islamic Fighting Group, which was based in Manchester, just around the corner from you, in that area. And it was put there by MI6. Now, this was the idea here is basically a little private army that MI6 could use in Libya. To disrupt, they were disaffected Libyans. Obviously, they could very easily, if they were sent over to Libya, just mingle in with the local population. But they were really working for the British MI6. And that's where he was. And his father, you're quite right, said he didn't believe that his son did it. I don't believe Salman Abedi did the Manchester Arena attack. And for it was at least maybe even 2 years. There was only one photograph that was ever released of Salman Abedi supposedly in a lift going to Manchester to plant his bomb. He had a backpack on. Now, there was no context to that at all. So what they'd done is that when they released this to the public, and none of the journalists questioned this, right? Nobody questions that. What they did is they blacked out everything around him. So it's just the guy and a rucksack. Now, listen, he could have been on the moon. He could have been in the swimming baths, just walking into to do his. There was no context whatsoever, and it does look as if his father was right. You know, my son wouldn't do this. The point is, he had been caught. There had been several calls made into the anti-terror hotline saying this guy is dodgy, dangerous, and of course that is the person that the MI5 and the counter-terror police in this country are not going to bother to look at and allow to go and carry out a bomb attack. The other explanation, of course, is that he's a patsy.
Yeah.
Right. So he's just being fitted up. Someone else has planted a bomb. Now that's quite possible. So let's have a look after the day after Sky News are down there and they interview this lady called Dawn Waddy. Dawn Waddy actually came back to talk to the press because she was so annoyed that none of the bags had been being checked as they went in. She actually said she asked them, she said, "Aren't you going to check bags?" "Oh, no, we don't need to check bags." So a whole place was just full up with people where nobody had any of their bags checked. So that got her annoyed to start with. But then I think she'd been there with her two daughters or something. And so she then starts to tell everybody on Sky News about a woman who'd been sitting next to her, who'd been fiddling with her bag, acting suspiciously. She didn't reply. She didn't seem to speak English. And she was acting suspiciously the whole way through the concert. She wasn't paying attention to the concert. And then, so she reported them, this person to security in the concert. And Dawn Waddy's got basically a dressing down by ShowSec as a company, the private security company yes. there. And they told her, "Look, you're being silly here. You know, we don't have to search her bag. Don't be silly." She was saying, "You should have a look in her bag. She's got something in her bag. She's acting really suspiciously. Please check her. She's right next to my kids." But anyway, they wouldn't and they didn't. Anyway, just before the end of the concert, just before the bomb, this lady walked out before the end, just before the end. And that was just as soon as she just left the auditorium, just after that was when the bomb went off. So, you know, it's a bit like Daniel Obuchicky on the bus with the London bombings. It looks like, you know, it's people who've been switched on and aware and awake have spotted the person who actually maybe really did it. So the subsequently Manchester, I'm not as knowledgeable about that.
Can you stay there just for one second? I need to clarify something. Tony is right when he talks about Dawn Waddy, and that in audio and video is available if you want to find it. So this woman told Sky News word for word what Tony attributed to her there. She talked about this mysterious woman with the bag and ShowSec showing no interest whatsoever in a little tap on the shoulder. "Is it okay, madam, if we see inside the bag?" So he's absolutely right there. So that was one obviously major issue with the official story.
Well, they weren't
story,
doing any security.
No, they weren't doing anything.
What the hell's going on?
No.
If you've got no security, you're not checking anyone's bags as they come in, nothing at all. What is the security people? Why are they even there? Why don't they just go down the pub?
And I can say this, Tony, because we have frequented that arena for years. So for many years before that bombing, we were going there all the time. So if anybody wants to suggest that security was way, way lax before, they're talking nonsense. Bags were taken and they were checked, they were emptied. It didn't matter who you were, bloke or woman. If you had a small bag, you had to open it and display the contents for whoever asked you to do it. So it wasn't the case that they increased security. Well, they did, obviously, after the bombing. But bags were a no-go even before the bombing. Sorry, go ahead.
Well, the security company, I would suggest, may have been paid off. You know, okay, here's a couple of £100,000 in your bank account. Just make sure there's not too much security this night, this specific night. I mean, then the security company are doing quite well, aren't they? All their guards are getting paid a normal wage by the venue from a, you know, big concerts like that. But then they're also getting a nice little bonus.
You'd never keep it quiet,
to allow a terrorist attack.
You'd never keep that quiet, Tony, would you? You'd never keep that quiet if it was the company.
Well, I think you could. Yeah, I think you could. If an organisation has been told not to check the bags, for whatever reason. And then afterwards, everyone's brought together and say, look, no one's allowed to talk to anybody about this. And this has been such a terrible night for us, blah, blah. Everyone then is told to keep their mouths shut. So they know to keep their mouths shut.
Maybe. Yeah, it's plausible. So the death count was terrible.
But there's no question over whether the security was on or not that night. It was off. There wasn't security.
No, you're right.
Multiple people have said that they were surprised that the bags weren't checked.
I concur. So, this is a fact. Yeah, they weren't checking bags. We're going to be talking about a certain individual. We can do it because I have invited Richard D. Hall on this program on umpteen occasions because when he began harassing the Hibberts, I talked about it on the show as a fair and, I hate to say this, it sounds very pompous, but as a qualified, real, old-school journalist, you must offer right of reply to anybody who you speak about on the programme, whether you're speaking about them in good or bad terms. Richard D. Hall has been extended an invitation many times to come on this programme. He has chosen not to, and I don't think it's because he's scared of the interrogation or any of that nonsense. He's decided he's not going to come on. I don't like him. I don't like the way he's gone about doing what he does, and I don't believe that nothing happened at the arena on the 17th of May 2017. And so Irish writers, she wouldn't be the first. It's interesting, Irish writers have begun looking into this arena thing and they're taking on this guy Richard D. Hall and they're asking questions about the motivations, not just of him, but of guys like him who do what guys like him do, which is, make lots and lots of films, make claims that nothing happened at all, that everybody there was a crisis actor, despite the fact that everybody knows Martin Hibbert. Everybody who lives around Martin Hibbert knows him and knows his daughter. They know he's in a wheelchair and he will be for the rest of his life, right? But according to Richard D. Hall, none of it happened. Martin Hibbert is an actor. And he was found guilty of stalking and harassing the Hibberts. You've never been one to criticise other content creators. Not as long as I've known you. You haven't been. And I must say this from the get-go. Tony Gosling doesn't do that thing of talking about content creators and belittling their work or trying to score points off of their work. But you are very interested in the coverage of this particular event and by this guy. Why?
Well, look, I do actually quite often criticise people, particularly people I think are, shoddy journalists, whether it's in the mainstream or in the fringes. The only stuff I do really on my programme is the stuff I think is reasonably well thought through and researched. But the things that Richard Hall has been doing, I mean, it doesn't stand the first like litmus test, which is look at the evidence. Just what are you talking about? Does what you're saying make sense? I mean, what he's done, I mean, I first came across him when we were in the 9/11 truth campaign. And I think it was around about the time of the 7/7 London bombings. And Richard was one of the first people to put out this nonsense about the aircraft that hit the Twin Towers, two Boeings, were actually holograms, right? Yeah. So this came out, it was just around the time that the various, I'm trying to remember the name, Richard Gage was one of them, but various experts, architects and engineers for 9/11 Truth, they were around this organization. And they were doing these fantastic presentations to massive audiences in the States. And of course, it was mainly focused on the US. Where they were absolutely pulling apart the collapse of the Twin Towers as controlled demolition. So bombs in the buildings, not planes with fires just going out at the top of the buildings. That's what brought down the Twin Towers and Building 7, right? And no plane even hit Building 7. So what happened there? Anyway, and fires don't bring that. But anyway, so this was just becoming like a thing. And so Richard comes out with this idea that, just forget about the
architects and the engineers,
the buildings, and architects. Yeah, here is a great, brilliant new theory which says that because the outside of the building, the Twin Towers was so strong, those aircraft, if they'd have hit the building, they would have just kind of bounced off, and because they're only made of aluminium. And so there must have been holograms. They must have been projected into the air. Now, look, this is the idea is as the truth is emerging. So that is to say to do with Building 7 being brought down by controlled demolition from inside, and obviously an inside job. The 9/11 is an inside job, quite clearly. They got bombs inside the buildings. So the lie starts to come out, right? So the idea is to just divert people off in the wrong direction. And some of the sort of people with a big reach, like David Icke, etc., will be used as a vehicle to get this myth out there in order to try to stop the truth, stop people getting the right idea. Now, I've seen this several times. We also saw it with the COVID. As it was being uncovered, Peter Daszak, and it was, I'm trying to think, where was it, on Fox News with Steve Hilton and Tucker Carlson digging into Dr. Fauci's Wuhan program, and they were starting to get that out on the mainstream through Fox News. So suddenly another theory came out at the time. Oh, no, there's no such thing as a virus, and the virus is just the made-up thing. And it's this terrain theory, and a film was released all about it to divert people away from the fact that actually there is a gain of function program, what is effectively a biological weapons program that the United States are doing over in China.
Let me say two things there, and then you'll get a good say again. The first thing I would say is I don't buy into the no virus idea, but I have interviewed pretty learned folks who do believe in terrain theory versus germ theory. So they're serious, and these aren't stupid people either. So you mightn't agree with them, but they have every right to put their theories forward.
Well, Hang on, Richard D. Hall.
No, let me
Richard
finish.
Richard D. Hall's not a stupid person.
I'm not saying, let me finish. Point two, you know that David Icke is a personal friend of mine. You know that he is a regular guest on this program. And I know that you know that nobody did more to make people aware of the work of Richard Gage, who I've interviewed many times, and who David did. Nobody did more than David Icke to platform or give or to make room for the architects and engineers. He wrote books about it. So that was unfair. David Icke wasn't used as some sort of stooge to muddy the waters about 9/11. No, he was on top of 9/11 before anybody else was. And he made sure that people like Richard Gage were heard. That's my second point. Over to you.
Okay, well, yeah. I mean, I think what happens with Icke, I mean, it's fine you being a personal friend, but what happens with Icke is you get some really good stuff and you get some nonsense.
What nonsense?
If you go back to the Second World War, this was Victor Rothschild developed this when he was an MI5 officer. In fact, he was head of security of MI5. This program called the Double Cross, where they had a whole load of German agents that they turned here in the UK. And most of what they fed these agents was brilliant. It was really good. And so the Abwehr over in Germany were picking up this stuff, or whoever they were that they were working for, whether it's their foreign intelligence service or whatever, were picking up this stuff from these agents saying, oh, brilliant, gold dust. This is fantastic, fantastic. But then at the key crucial time, when it came to something like D-Day, these people were feeding nonsense. So I think that's where, I'm not singling out David Icke specifically, but he's got a long, long reach.
But you have, though. You have
singled him out. No, I'm not singling him out specifically. I think there's quite a lot of people like this. And I don't really want to name loads of them, but Icke is quite a well-known.
But what do you mean? Hang on a second. Let me jump in. Look, you know you're going to get plenty of a say here. You know we're mates. You're going to get... This is going to be a robust exchange, but you're going to get plenty of your say.
Yeah.
What do you mean nonsense? He believes we live in a simulation. He believes that interdimensional beings control vicariously some of what goes on this planet. He's evidenced this as best as he can, whether you agree with him or whether you don't, through his travellings and his writings over the years. He believes this. Do you not think it's a little bit arrogant?
He can believe these things. I think, I don't want to get bogged down with talking about...
Neither do I, but I'm going to defend him.
He's not as pernicious as Hall, right? So David Icke will put stuff out like, for example, who made the moon, right? The moon is actually a hollow metal spaceship. And when Neil Armstrong landed on the moon, the first thing he said was, "Oh my God, it rings like a bell."
Now, I don't believe I've ever heard David say that, but I have
he
read.
Has. Let me he
hang
has
on,
said
hang
that,
on, let me
Richie.
Finish, Tony. Hang on. Listen, I'm going to qualify it. I've heard him say over the years that, and I've checked this out for myself. NASA did launch objects at the moon, and the moon did ring, didn't it? Isn't that a fact? Isn't it? I'm pretty sure it is. I'm going to look it up as we're speaking. Go on.
I personally do believe that the Apollo 11 did land on the moon, and that there was such a thing as the Apollo program. You know, I think actually back in those days, the mainstream press did its job a lot better. And also, I think the Russians would have been particularly, you know, triumphal if the Americans had only pretended. I think for a lot of people, there was a film that came out which simulated a shot to the moon, and where they shot it all in a sort of Hollywood. I can't remember the name of the film. In basically about 1980, this film came out. It's sort of stuck in your mind. So people think, well, maybe they didn't go to the moon because they showed this film about some astronauts who were pulled off the launch pad and then put into a studio. I'm sure many of your listeners will know exactly the film title of the film I'm talking about. I think there's lots and lots of stuff out there like this. No, we never went to the moon, which is just
Hang on a second. Let me ask you a question. Who are you to be the arbiter of what a person truly believes and doesn't believe? Just before you answer that, it's been David's belief for decades that the moon plays some part in projecting the hologram. It's what he believes. And by the way, I've interviewed Rich Terrell from NASA several times, and he says that mathematicians from Ivy League universities believe that they can now write the equations, or at least decipher the equations or see them, that would explain to them that we are living in some sort of look. I'll give you my final word, and then you'll get your final word. I'll say no more about it.
We'll get back to Richard Hall.
Exactly, we'll get back to Richard Hall. You and I obviously have very different opinions on David Icke, and I have never censored anybody. I'm not censoring you. You'll get the final word. I lived with David Icke. David Icke believes what he says. He has always believed what he says. And nobody has the right to gaslight him. I'm not saying you're doing that. By saying he doesn't believe it and that he's part of some psyop to distract from the really important stuff.
I didn't say he doesn't believe it. I think he does believe it. But I just think he's wrong.
Well, just say that then.
That's what I said.
You were lumping him in with some disinformation agents who want to put stuff out there.
Well, I mean, he's used as a conduit for disinformation.
I think he's a bit too clever to be used as a conduit. Final word.
I think he's a very smart guy, but I think he's also living in a bit of an illusion where he thinks that the truth is being channeled to him somehow.
Why don't you interview him?
No, you've got to sit. I think you have to sit and work it out for yourself.
Why don't you interview him? Give him a proper 90 minutes and have a chat.
I'm happy to. I've put several requests interview day. In fact, I've met him twice. He came around to my house when I lived in Bedminster. This is back, I think, a bit in the late 1990s, around about 2000. Because he'd been brought round there to chat about the Bilderbergers. But the guys that were with him were telling me, oh, yes, at Bilderberg, they have these, they dress up in these white monk's coats and they have these, rituals. And I'm like, no, they don't. What are you talking about?
I think what happened was he left the toilet seat up, didn't he, in your gaff back in Badminton. You've just never forgiven him for it. David is brilliant. He'll be on this programme tomorrow talking about the disgusting censorship. You know, a Labour MP has tried to convince Nottingham Arena to cancel a talking event David has got there next year. I know you don't agree with that. Listen, we'll agree to disagree on David, but it's very important what you came on to talk about, the Richard Hall stuff. Now, but you know, maybe I am going to shut up and let you speak for the next 10 minutes uninterrupted. But maybe Richard D. Hall supporters might say, maybe he genuinely believed this shit that he puts out about, you know, nobody died there and they're all crisis actors and Martin Hibbert is a liar. Maybe he believes that. Go on.
I don't think so. I don't think he does. I mean, when I first came across him, I just didn't trust him. He comes across as quite shifty and a bit fake. That's part of what a journalist's job is. This is a bit like a police detective. You've got to get a hunch as to whether someone's lying or not. And there are all sorts of signals that people give out when they are. But it's the actual content of what he's saying, really. I wouldn't need to, you know, see a film of him or anything.
Yeah.
When he starts to write about holograms hitting the World Trade Center just at the time, that, you know. And, I mean, there's been a whole load of other things he's said. The Madeleine McCann's parents or mother killed her. Or abducted her on purpose, and that this. So what he there's a bit of a theme that runs through a lot of Hall's work, which is that the people who are actually victims of some attack are actually the perpetrators rather than the victims. Now this is a particularly nasty, pernicious, evil, wicked way to twist events. And what it does, of course, is it means that not only does someone have to suffer the loss of a loved one or the loss of a leg, an arm, an eye, whatever it is. But then they also have to suffer somebody telling the world that they're just lying, they're an actor, and that nothing happened at all. And this person is just a lie. You know, so it's a particularly nasty. And what I mean, okay, so with there's the Madeleine McCann and there's the 9/11 stuff. His stuff on Joe Cox I watched and I thought, well, what's this? You know, there's not all that much. You're not really saying all that much here. Personally, it seemed pretty obvious to me that the murder of Joe Cox was in order to try to gain sympathy for the anti-Brexit vote. It happened just before.
Yeah.
And it seems that was the point of it, was the attempt to, you know, make out that the Brexiteers were sort of violent maniacs or something. And I think to a certain extent, it did probably drive people to vote against Brexit more or to campaign against it more. But it's Hall's stuff around Manchester, which I think has really shown him up to be the dangerous. But I think he's actually a very dangerous.
Do you know
man.
What annoyed me too? Can I tell you what annoyed me about that exercise was? Now I've got, like yourself, both of us have very, very thick skin. You don't always have it. You develop it over the years. And we're lucky enough. We're in a position where we really don't care what people think about us. When Hall was doing this stuff, I reached out to Hall to say, look, not only do I know an armed police officer who can give you a different account of events, but I also know a nurse whose brother was very friendly with Caroline and myself. He was a Man City fan. He used to come and watch City with us. And she had been at Manchester Royal Infirmary. And had been talking about it and had been there. And you see, if Hall was a journalist, you see, like if you were a journalist, like you might really believe what it is you're saying, but a real journalist would be like, well, hang on a second now. Richie Allen is not a researcher. He's not out there saying what did and what did happen because, you know, I can't do that. But let's go and meet the people he has spoken about. But he had no interest in speaking to those people. Because what they were saying didn't fit the narrative that the whole thing was a massive big hoax. Nobody died. I can tell you this, Tony, just before you come back in, we're getting messages from people who think that both of us are absolute rat bastards. I'm getting messages from people saying nothing happened there. The lights were all still working and the images we saw were just of a few people lying around on the ground. It all looked very weird. And so some of our listeners are saying, nah, you're talking bollocks, lads. The whole thing was one big non-event, one big, what do they call it, T? What's the word they use? Hoax. It just never happened. There was no bomb at all, they're telling us.
Well, look, there was a bomb. There were injured people. Some of my contacts are, I mean, I'm in contact with some of the people who were, I mean, you know, you're talking about, was it Martin Hibbert who lost his legs?
Yeah.
There's a whole bunch of people now who have been victims of these terrorist attacks. And then let's just take a quick step back, and not a long diversion here, a tangent, but if you think about the way that this terrorism operates, right, is quite, I mean, so for example, Manchester, the London Bridge attack, I think it was in its Southwark Market or somewhere, I can't remember exactly where in London.
Yeah.
These three attacks took place just before the 2017 election. And just after Manchester, Boris Johnson goes all over the TV everywhere saying, Jeremy Corbyn is friends with these terrorists, blah, blah, blah. Look, here's a picture of him with some Palestinian people, blah, yes. blah, blah. So it was used as a way, I think, to sort of steer the last weeks of the TV coverage of the political differences between Jeremy Corbyn Boris Johnson and the rest, you know. So this is, I think, a major role of terrorism in the world today. It's not just about the geopolitics of, you know, maybe murdering a political opponent or whatever, but it's become this, you know, this way of steering news debate, news discussion, getting everybody afraid just beforehand. And this was all being pinned on Corbyn just in the last couple of weeks, just before that 2017 general election.
That's right.
So, you know, this, if people are looking for a motive, why someone would want to blow people up. But the problem with Hall and his friends, I mean, there's two people particularly who've been literally just cutting and pasting these bizarre ideas that the people who were injured never were injured, right, to try and blame them, which is Ian Davis, I-A-I-N Davis, who Athleen points out quite rightly. What is his icon on his blog?
But who is he, this guy? I don't know. Who is this guy?
Well, he's written for the UK column, etc. Right. He's a he's an independent writer of some sort who purports to be an independent person, right?
You didn't have to say anymore.
But on his blog, it's got the smiley face symbol, which, by the way, is very closely connected, if you read up on the Order of Nine Angles, to these people. They had in the States a whole series of what they call the smiley face killers. So people who were murdered and then the smiley face sticker or some smiley face card was left with the dead body, which is just this yellow smiley face. It used to be used for the sort of ecstasy rave scene, I think, in the 90s. That's the first time I saw it. But on Ian Davis's icon, it's got this like blood going across it. You know, across the eye, just by the eye of the smiley face, there's this blood dripping down the side. So this, to me, I mean, this is an occultic symbol, whether he knows that or not. Why is he, you know, this is getting very sinister.
But why would you be, hang on a second, you have a massive profile. You've been around for years. Oh. Your show has an enormous listenership here. But it does have. Why would you? I mean, I don't know anything about this Ian Davis guy. He's obviously not anybody with much of a reach. Why would anybody be concerned about what he says? Let him spout all the bollocks he wants, Tony. Why should we be worried about it?
Well, because the bollocks that he's spouting about Manchester, I mean, he may well say some sensible things about other stuff. You know, I don't really care. But as soon as you start to, I mean, what is the effect that it's having by keeping the victims, by literally bullying the victims of the attack, by also having a longer term effect of encouraging governments to put in legislation to stop independent researchers coming out with outlandish theories. And this of course,
important.
Has been threatened again
important.
And again Richard Hall's case.
This is important.
Even during Richard Hall's case.
This is what
people
it's
are
about.
Saying, well, we need new laws to stop this, right?
This is right.
But
this
not
is...
only that, the most pernicious thing that people like David Hughes, Ian Davis and Richard Hall seems to be in the centre, the other two more peripheral. What these three are doing is they're actually making the next false flag attack of whatever sort, or Patsy attack, the next killing of innocent people in this country more likely and more possible for people to do this because they're developing techniques to try and steer the debate after an attack away from people actually nailing the true actual killers.
Yeah, well, hang on. You've got to let
so
me
I
in
think
there.
That's the biggest effect, I think, why I really take issue with what Hall is up to.
I've got to jump in there because I agree and I disagree. You're right that this idiocy or bad behaviour by certain content creators will be used as the pretext to introduce all sorts of online laws about what can. I agree, 100% I agree with you. But when something happens again, you're talking about real fringe people who most of whom I've never heard of. I've never bragged in the 12 years I've been doing this show, but Jesus Christ, Tony, this show has an enormous audience. Yours does. Others do. It's not to these clowns people are going to be going to try and get some sort of understanding of what's happened. They'll come to these sources because we're not telling them what did happen. we're asking questions and introducing people who have some knowledge on it to talk. That's what it's all about. I wouldn't get too bogged down about who's going to listen to them. Because from what I can see, most of the time these people, and I don't really know them, but when I do come up against them, most of these people are so narcissistic and so self-obsessed that they spend most of their time falling out with one another on social
media.
You're
missing the point. You're missing the point.
What's the
point? And the point is that loads, I mean, if anyone is thinking about, oh, are there any alternative theories around Manchester? If they do a Google search or whatever, or even if they're just dreaming about it, Richard Hall is going to be the person that pops into their brain. I mean, he's had loads and loads of publicity, all of it negative. And also, it's all about what didn't actually happen at Manchester, just like the official story of Salman Abedi doing it. What doesn't get heard and doesn't get discussed is the role of the security services in these sorts of attacks.
Why did it happen,
And most importantly... The other side, the people who are doing these attacks are developing their own tactics, their own systems for dealing with the backlash once people start actually putting two and two together and thinking, looking at the actual evidence, so real journalists. I mean, so just one thing about Manchester is that the police actually kept the emergency services, the fire and ambulance people, away from the scene. I mean, this is extraordinary, outrageous. Of course,
If
I'd lost one of my family members in that attack, I would be absolutely livid. But at the inquest, there's hardly any opportunity for those families to have the people who made those decisions in any way called to account. This is the way to deal with these terror attacks of whatever sort, is when people are making erroneous decisions it's a bit like Hillsborough or something. You know, there seems to be no an immediate kind of establishment clampdown on those who have made those wrong decisions, bad decisions. So it's very difficult to stop a terrorist attack taking place. But you've got to have really good people in place, chief constables, assistant chief constables, superintendents, whoever is on the scene, inspectors, to make the right decision to save lives. But they're not doing that. And the other thing that the police are doing these days, he said they're doing this very often. They're doing this shoot to kill business where the only person that's going to be able to give any sort of an explanation in court as to why they've done what they've done, whether it's the Manchester synagogue attacker or anybody else that we see in some sort of attack.
Yeah, but it's easy for us to say that.
Their brains are blown out.
It's easy for us to say that. If you're on scene, if you're at a crime scene and a guy's running around waving a knife or a gun, you know, I can understand.
Yeah, bring him down.
But that's TJ Hooker stuff, though. Shoot him in the...
Don't blow his brains out. He's a key witness as to who put him up to it. What's been going on here? I mean, you know, where, for example, with the Nottingham attacker that was going around killing people, you know, the most important thing to understand, surely, is about how he was allowed out. Let's look at the professionals, the competence crisis, right? Where the professionals that have been put in place, pliable individuals who are actually making things worse. You could almost pluck a random person off the street and they would do a better job because they're doing everything by the book. And this is particularly pernicious, this whole shoot to kill business, because it means that the person who's there may not even know quite why they ended up doing what they were doing. But at least if they're alive, they can be interrogated and there can be a proper court case to find these things out. But when if they're killed, you can't do that. This really started, didn't it, with Death on the Rock?
That's right. Dead men don't tell tales.
This is back in the 1980s where the SAS were brought in to assassinate the IRA people.
Yeah, that's right.
And there was a massive outcry at the time saying, hang on, how can law enforcement assassinate these people? What you do in a civilized society is you arrest them. Okay, they may have guns. If they decide that they want to try and start a shootout, then you've stolen the march on them anyway. That you just tell them, shout to them, put your guns down, and if they don't, you kill them. Okay, but no, nowadays there is none of that, and it's the main thing that these individuals in the armed police forces around the country seem to do now is they shoot first, shoot to kill, and ask questions later, and that's why we're never going to get to the bottom of so many of these different attacks that are taking place, and it's basically a failure of moral duty of the authorities to actually be on the right side of the law. They don't seem to care anymore. If they can blow someone away, that means less paperwork.
and police officers do not resemble police officers that we would have seen in our towns and cities when we were growing up. There was a comment made by somebody under a Telegraph article. I read the Telegraph and the Times for this programme. There was a photograph of two women, two female police officers in London. They weren't attending a crime scene. They were just protecting something. And they looked like paramilitary soldiers, conscripts. I mean, it's staggering. Hang on a sec, Tony.
We're moving into a police state, yes. And people like Richard D. Hall that are actually aiding that. I mean, just think, we were talking earlier about these Palestine Action, these pensioners being arrested. You know, this is what a police state looks like. They're also emptying prisons, aren't they? Are they going to be putting the pro-Palestinians in prison? I mean, the way the law stands at the moment, it's possible for a judge to send anybody that supports Palestine Action down for 14 years. Maybe that's why they're getting rid of the rapists and murderers from the prison, so they can fill it up with pensioners who support Palestine.
But they had a win recently. Palestine Action had a win. I want to say something to Chiro, who's a long-time listener. I'm going to sound like James O'Brien now, and I don't want to really. It's going to sound a bit shitty, but I'm going to say it to Chiro anyway. He's telling me or us that if we don't know people like this guy, Davis or Hall, then we should be wary of presuming and commenting on them so dismissively. Now, I've got to jump in there, and I'm going to say this very quickly. This is very important. While Tony disagrees with me in terms of, Tony says that he has gone after people in the independent media previously, I've never really heard it from Tony. Tony's generally, from what I can see, got on with his own work and done his own work. I don't know who this guy Davis is. I never heard of him. But if he's working with UK Column, I have every right to laugh out loud when I hear the term UK Column. And I'll tell you why in 45 seconds. There has never been a bigger fraud in the history of the independent media than a guy called Brian Gerrish. Ever. In the history of journalism. And Gerrish isn't a journalist. He's not a writer. He's not a broadcaster. I don't know what he is. Gerrish is the guy.
He was an ex-Royal Navy commander, guy. I think, or a captain.
Correct. And that could be a mark against him or not. But I'm going to tell my listeners. You see, I come from a time as a qualified journalist broadcaster. If you do the things that Brian Gerrish did, namely, if you put people on the air to tell a story about their children being witnesses to babies being butchered and cooked in a McDonald's in Hampstead in London. If you put them on the air, these people, and you know that the story they're pushing or peddling is complete bollocks, you are nothing but a grifter and a fraud. And sadly, in the business of media and journalism, you never, and nor should you ever, get a second chance. The minute a content creator is demonstrated to be telling lies or peddling a story for attention, for clicks or for money, they are finished forevermore.
Well, no, but I mean, just to be fair to Brian, right?
No.
Can we be fair to Brian?
Every word I've said there is true. The Hampstead child abuse stuff.
I'm not saying it's not, right? But he did do a very good job in the noughties in exposing the role of this organisation, Common Purpose.
Yeah, but I couldn't care less about
that. And I think that Gerrish was one of the main people who was digging out evidence of that. And also...
But hang on, Tony. You talked about Richard D. Hall going out and doing pernicious stuff. Brian Gerrish put a man and a woman and her boyfriend, on air repeatedly with two children who were telling the most fantastical and ridiculous story. And I know that Gerrish knew that to be bollocks. And David Icke knows that Gerrish knew that to be bollocks because we challenged him. Gerrish wouldn't make these people available. And I was stunned when Channel 4 did a documentary on this Hampstead hoax that Gerrish got away with it when nobody pushed it as hard as he did. He convinced the German woman that this was real. She went to prison, this woman, because of Gerrish. Gerrish had people...
You're talking about Sabine McNeil.
Gerrish had people turning up and harassing people in Hampstead. People who believe that the people there were murdering and cooking children. Gerrish is the scum of the earth.
He was hit with a sting. I mean, you have to understand that if a journalist, just a minute, if a journalist is successful, and let's say
dirty,
UK Column did become successful, a bit like the light paper, it starts to get a big circulation. There's people who are subscribing to it, etc. And there seems to be a particularly the evil empire hates people producing their own newspapers unless they're controlled, right? Maybe you know, these papers are controlled. But one of the things I noticed about the Canary, which is a, I think, excellent website. I think, I can't remember, the, is it Steve Topple, who's the editor these days? And they do some excellent stuff. I mean, not everything's brilliant, but they about 2 months ago, they produced their first print edition. Right, so they're going from the internet into print, which gives them all sorts of other possibilities. I think it was a weekly print edition of the Canary that people could subscribe to. They can do advertising and things through that, etc. Almost the next day, their bank were debanked. So these sorts of, there is a lot of pressure on organizations like UK Column, etc., and you and I, to make sure that they don't start growing, right?
Yeah, but that doesn't explain. Hang on, let me in. You can't just keep talking.
So they may target Gerrish, is what I'm saying. You know what happened with Piers Morgan, of course, at the Mirror.
Let me back in.
He was targeted with a sting because he was against the Iraq War.
Let me back in for a second. Until COVID, UK Column did nothing. They did nothing in terms of website or reach. Nothing. I know this because I was always, I'm very competitive, me. I was always very aware throughout the 2010s who was doing what in terms of numbers and reach and stuff like that, because I would measure myself and my content against it. How am I doing, right? It might sound weird to people, but anybody who's ever worked in commercial media will understand that. They did nothing until 2020, when Gerrish began putting out more outlandish and bullshit stories on his website about speaking to doctors who were giving him information about hospitals. And of course, it was all lies, but the reach grew and grew and grew. That Hampstead stuff, it was just unforgivable. He is one of the chief architects of that hoax, telling his viewers that babies were being killed and eaten at a primary school in Hampstead. Complete and utter bollocks. And you know, the funny thing about that was, at that time, I made a point of going after him. You know what he would do, Gerrish? He would ring davidicke.com and he would cry to David, asking David, would David tell me to stop? And David told him to fuck off, grow a pair, and why don't you go on the show and defend yourself against Richie? And Gerrish hadn't the balls to come on this programme. He is vile, absolutely vile.
But there are a lot of people trying to do what we do. Do you remember one lady called Anna Breeze?
Oh, Jesus, don't get me started there. Well, she would tell people not to appear on people's programmes.
That's right. She messaged me saying, I see you're going to appear on Richie Allen's show later, Tony. Are you sure you really want to do that? I don't think it's a very good idea, do you?
Imagine
that. So these are gatekeepers. There's a lot of the gatekeeping goes on.
Gerrish is awful. Brian, I know Gerrish listens to this religiously. Brian, if you want to if you want to go to a solicitor, Brian, do. If you want to sue me for libel, do. But you can't, because everything
I've
said is
true. At least you have
true.
To point out that the UK
man.
Column do some good stuff.
No,
I use
don't.
Them from time
no,
to time.
Don't.
Yes, they do.
No, they don't.
Yes, they do. Garbage. Sorry. I mean, they've done some excellent an analysis of the sort of security state in Britain over the years.
I've got to be honest, I've got to be honest.
Mike Robinson.
I've got to be honest. You might be right. I don't read it.
It's not just Gerrish, is what I'm saying. Anyway, I don't know. I think it, really the listeners and the readers
make your own
decide,
mind up.
Don't they?
Absolutely. And I say to look, I've never told, it's funny you mentioned Breeze. I have never, ever, ever, even when I was really going for Gerrish in 2014, 2015. I mean, I was embarrassing him. He was mortified, right? And he genuinely was crying to David Icke. He would ring David and cry about it. And David would say, you know, be a man. And if you've got something, to say, go on the show and say it. But he wouldn't. How can you defend that? Telling people that children are being cooked and all the stuff he was going on with. But I just find it
stuff we're talking about with the alternative media is nothing compared to what goes on in the mainstream.
No.
You know, how editors, you know, the editor of the, do you think about Rod Liddell that died last week?
Yeah.
I mean, he was one of the most, we can say this a week after he died, one of the most hideous individuals on planet Earth.
He was a polemicist. He did his job. A polemicist's job is to write inflammatory pieces.
Yeah, to
wind
talk
people
about
up.
How wonderful it would be to have more child pornography.
He never said
you
that.
You know, this is disgusting. Yes, he did.
No, he didn't.
Yes,
he can read the piece. He didn't say that at all. Do you want me to read it out?
He does say it, actually. And what he's saying is it should be okay to read child pornography. It shouldn't be a crime. Well, how if you're going to be allowed to read child pornography, this is a whole industry, right? So you're going to actually enable these abusers to produce child pornography for your now so-called legal thing that you're now wanting to do.
Let me retort.
You actually thought that through.
Let me retort.
Mr. Middle?
Let me retort. Of course, he's wrong to say that looking at pornography or child abuse images shouldn't be a crime. He was wrong to say that. Of course, if you are to be found downloading images of child abuse, you should be arrested and charged.
It's not journalism, is it?
No. The point he was making a wider point about Pete Townsend, and he was making a point about police officers' time being wasted, you know, as far as he saw it, looking into what people were looking at online. I don't agree with him. Got to say that before some of my less intelligent listeners don't understand. I agree with you. It should absolutely be a crime to be looking at stuff. But he wasn't saying that it should be okay, that we should all go and look at child abuse images. He was saying it's a waste of police time to be snooping on what we're looking at on the internet. You know, should it be against the law to look at things was basically what he was saying. I say yes, but he wasn't justifying child abuse. That's unfair.
No, it isn't. He was actually encouraging it. What he's doing by saying that this shouldn't be a crime is saying let's have an whole industry producing this stuff. I mean, it's not journalism anyway. All I'm saying about him is he was there. He was promoted, right, from this sort of world where it was around 2003, I think he wrote that, into the BBC to become the editor of the Today programme.
That's right.
So you can see the sort of, you know, really appalling decisions that are being made at the very highest levels. I always remember, I think it was Jonathan Powell, who was one of the advisors to Tony Blair on one, I think it was Saturday Night Live that Charlie Skelton was working on. And we were watching this at the time. I think it was ITV or Sky or something. And on Jonathan Powell's, they were talking about how, you know, politics and he said, well, yes, but it's nothing compared to what goes on in the media. And he looked at the camera, right? You know, political skullduggery. And of course, it is exactly like that. It's really nasty. The very top end of the news
all
media
right.
in this country
hang on.
Hideous place.
Hang on, you deserve this now, so I'm going to do it to you, even though I love you. Should it really be a crime to look at child pornography? Rod Little, Tuesday, January 14th, 2003. Listeners can read it.
Yeah, okay.
I don't agree with him. I don't. Of course you should be arrested if you're looking at images of child abuse. Jesus Christ, it's hardly a victimless crime. I mean, if you're not going out to rape children, it's still a crime because children are victims. He talks about, obviously, Pete Townsend. Scotland Yard is scouring the files of Pete Townsend to look at blah, blah, blah.
They were doing an excellent job, as it happens. Right. They were going through all the records of people who've been buying child porn.
I don't interrupt you.
Through their credit cards.
I don't interrupt you. Hang on a second, Mr. Gosling. Right, he goes.
That's Operation Or.
He goes, Operation Or. How absurd the law is. But at least it is an appropriate reflection of our collective neurosis and confusion about pedophilia generally. Now listen. The one laudable and necessary aim is to protect children from abuse. That has become warped by our consuming obsessive hatred for those who find children sexually attractive. Listen, there is no causal link between viewing child porn and abusing children. And even if there were, it would not be sufficient within the philosophy of our judicial system to simply assume that an unpleasant penchant for the former presupposes guilt of the latter. Now, I don't fucking agree with that. I don't agree with it. Right? I understand why people would hate people who find children sexually attractive. And I think there probably is a causal link between looking at child abuse online and abusing children. But he didn't know if there was. He's not saying it's okay to look at child porn
images.
But
he did find children sexually attractive, didn't he?
He said he
admitted it.
He said he couldn't be a teacher He couldn't be a high school teacher because he'd fancy the girls.
Yeah, because he'd find the kids sexually attractive. Yeah. Right.
Polemus is shite.
This, what I'm saying is, this: what he's doing with the journalism is actually incitement to crime. So this idea that there's no connection between producing child porn and watching it is total bullshit, isn't it? Quite obviously. If you're going to produce it, or if you're going to view it, it needs to be produced. So you're talking rubbish, mate.
Course,
and also, he's also, like I say, he's doing a little bit like, now I'm no great fan of Nigel Farage, but what we had the other week was extraordinary. This whole business of a t-shirt with a guillotine, we're making plans for Nigel. This is a personal death threat against Farage. If they were to say that about the chief rabbi, right, you would have immediate, like, complete category. Everyone would be arrested and anywhere near it, right? So this idea of using journalism in order to incite crime seems to me now normal, you know, where it's okay. You can put a picture of this Farage thing on your newspaper and you can say, oh, it's not a crime, it's not a problem here. And you can actually start making a fortune out of producing Let's Kill Nigel t-shirts. And the police are saying nothing about it. And by the way, on, I think it was LBC, I heard that day, there was a LBC News. They had an ex-cop on saying, well, why should the police get involved with silly things like incitement to murder somebody? Why would the police want to do that? You know, this is the police's sodding job, mate. And it turned out that that copper who was on there, Roy Ram, I think is his name, he turned out to be the head of undercover policing in the 1990s. In other words, someone who was really wedded in with the bloody spy cops, sorry to swear, spy cops scandal, right? Someone who was putting cops up to having sex with and having relationships and even getting married, maybe, to people who had not even committed a crime.
Yeah.
So hacking their lives and having kids with them. So you can see what's happening here is what we're getting is a police that doesn't actually take any interest in enforcing the criminal law anymore. And incitement to commit murder absolutely is a very serious crime. People should have their collars felt immediately.
And that's the final word, because we're just about to run out of time. It went on longer than I'd anticipated. So apologies to you if I've kept you on longer than we'd agreed. You can hear Tony on Friday, this coming Friday at 5 p.m. in Bristol. It is one of the best radio programmes in this country on any day. Thisweek.org.uk to find out more about it. We'll pick this up again in September when I return from my holiday. Might be a bit less dramatic. Maybe. Always a pleasure, pal. Thank you for your time today. Really appreciate it.
God bless. God bless you. Thanks ever so much, Richie. Good to have an opportunity to a bit of cut and thrust over these issues, because we're sliding down the road to lawlessness, really. So we've got, you know, what with the Palestine Action stuff, that's sort of really kicking in now, where we've got, you know, old people who are trying to stop babies being killed, being put in prison, and rapists and murderers being cleared out of prison to make way for them. What the hell is going on?
Well, if you want to find out the
world of Andy Burnham.
If you want to find out, thisweek.org.uk, the Bristol Politics Show this Friday. Tony, thanks. We'll speak in September. We will.
Cheers Richie. Pal. All the best, mate.
You too, hello, mate. Bye for now. Bye. Bye. Yeah. Yeah. Little, I think Little's article is an interesting read. Look it up. January 14th, just look for Rod Little, and should it really be a crime to look at child pornography? It's a polemicist piece, right? Of course it should be a crime, and it should be a crime that's punishable by time in prison. But some of it is interesting reading, that's all I'll say. And my politics, for anybody who knows, would be a million miles away from Rod Little. Interesting stuff, yeah. The other stuff we talked about, listen, it's very, very subjective. It's very subjective. Listeners, many of our listeners will never have heard me ever speak about Gerrish or anybody like that. But back in the day, when he was doing some extraordinarily shitty things, like, you know, talking about a woman called Melanie Shaw in Nottingham, a victim of abuse, telling terrible lies about her. I was able to expose this stuff on air. And the Hampstead stuff is there for anybody who wants to see it. It isn't my subjective opinion. It is an objective fact. Gerrish lied. He lied and lied and lied and lied. And he did it for attention. And he did it to try and grow his platform. He lied. He put a man and a woman and their children on the air repeatedly, telling anybody who would listen that there was a primary school in Hampstead where children were being murdered and eaten, and that other children were being fed the body parts. It was disgusting. It was despicable. It was easily debunked. But he pushed it because he saw the attention it was getting and bringing to him. And he did the same about real victims of abuse like Melanie Shaw. I exposed them. It wasn't my opinion. It was using objective facts. He didn't like it. He ran and ran and ran and cried about it. And the more he did, the more I continued to expose him. And then I gave up because I'm not vindictive. You know, I'll expose somebody once and leave it at that. But, yeah, I wouldn't worry so much if I was Tony about the reach of these people, because from what I can see, they don't have much of a reach at all. And, you know, I'm very, very acutely aware of the iTunes podcast charts, the Spotify charts and other charts. I know who's building an audience and who's reaching people, and I know who the spoofers are. And ultimately, when it all boils down, I couldn't really give a shit. Tristoni, who wanted to get into Richard D. Hall tonight, I think it's fascinating. You know, are these people deluded? Do they believe what it is they say? Is there something more sinister going on? Are they part of some kind of misdirection effort? Right? I just don't know. I'm not a researcher. I'm a journalist who interviews researchers and who talks to them. Sometimes I find what they say interesting. Sometimes I don't. And sometimes, like with the aforementioned former Navy officer, you can see through it. It's so transparent. It'll be the last time you ever hear me mention that guy. He was offered numerous opportunities to come on this programme to defend himself, and he decided not to. Because if he's on live with me, he has nowhere to go, does he? And that's ultimately all I've got to say about that today. Really interesting programme. Thank you, Tony. Love listening to him. David Icke will be on the show tomorrow. My old friend will be on to talk about the disgusting news that the Labour MPs in Nottingham have been trying to convince a huge venue not to stage a David Icke event next year. That's really important. We'll talk about more besides. Nick Buckley, MBE, will be on the programme on Wednesday, and a certain French woman will join me for a bit of talk about all things esoteric, just me and her, on Thursday. It's going to be a very busy week, and I'm enjoying it. My last week before I take my break, which I can't wait for. I'm loving it. I'm loving it at the moment. I'm loving the show in recent weeks. I'm really enjoying it. But at the same time, I haven't had a break since early April, and I need one. So, yeah, we're going to have a good week to finish it out. Closing out with The Who. Thanks for listening. Thanks again, Tony. Thank you. Enjoy the rest of your Monday. From Richie Allen, live in Salford, from the most popular independent news radio show in the world, it's goodbye from me.